Welcome back to Hot and Bothered with me, Sarah Jane Dunn, and I am back with a brand new series that is all about exploring our sexuality as women and banishing the taboos that are holding us back. This week, I am super excited to be chatting with empowerment coach and all-round lovely lady and a good friend of mine, Jill Ritchie. Jill, thank you so much for coming on the new series of Hot and Bothered.
I am so excited to be here, actually. I'm buzzing as you were saying those words. I'm like, this is so cool.
Yeah, so I'm going to start the pod with our Hot and Bothered. So I'll let you go first. What has got you hot this week, Jill?
Oh, what has got me hot? Well, do you know what's really getting me hot right now is Carol Vorderman. I don't know if you saw Carol Vorderman. I think it was last week on This Morning, talking about her multiple partners that she has and how she doesn't want to just have like one husband. And I thought, praise be, I wanted to get up and give her a round of applause. I thought, this is what we need to be talking about, because I see this, I hear this a lot from clients. I've studied this work, and you know, monogamy, it's a great thing if it's for you, right? But equally, it's not for a lot of people. And there's been so much shame around it. So for her to stand up in her truth and vulnerability to stand there and share that, I thought it was absolutely incredible. So she's got me hot this week.
Yeah, I feel like she's really owning it, isn't she?
Yeah, I see her as a real leader for women empowerment, and to stand there and say, you know, I'm over the age of 50. I think Carol's like late 50s maybe. She looks incredible, but regardless of her age, just to own that. And it just gives other people permission. Not that we don't need permission, but often we do want to see someone leading the way. And it's like, I'm not weird. I'm not weird that I feel that way. So I love that.
Yeah, we love orders. Go on.
And bothered. What's got me bothered? I feel like, again, it goes back to, for me, people, women in particular, looking for permission to do something. I see a lot of women that deeply desire something in their life, but they're so afraid to speak their truth, and therefore living that life that is unfulfilled and not the true essence of who they are. And it always bothers me, and you know, that's why I do what I do. But yeah, I still see much of that happening, and I'd love to see that change in women to really own their authenticity, Sarah.
Yeah. Well, that's great, because that sort of goes into what we'll be chatting about more today. My hot and bother very quickly is my hot is that I got to spend some really gorgeous quality time with some of my closest friends this week, which was absolutely lovely. We've not seen each other as a four for ages, and I just really appreciated that quality female support and time together. And I've known them all since high school, and so to spend time with women that really know you and probably know me better than I know myself, just to be my authentic self and not to have to feel like you fitting into anything or trying to be something that you're not, it was really, really lovely. And then my bothered, again, really leads nicely into this episode. My bothered has just changed as I literally walked into the building today. There were a couple of paparazzis outside taking pictures as I came in. And there's a building site literally next to where we're doing the pod at the moment. And first of all, a few of the guys started heckling and was waiting for our lovely producer, Abby, to let me in the building. One of the guys was like, oh, excuse me, are you on Sky Sports? And I was like, no. And then continued to be like, excuse me, what's your name? What's your name? Can you hear me? And I just felt so uncomfortable. And so like, I was literally just essentially walking into work. And I'm in a jumpsuit. I'm completely covered. I've got nothing on show. And it just really led into what we're going to be talking about today, which is women being comfortable in their sexuality, being able to be authentic, being able to be truthful to themselves and have that sort of freedom to be yourself. So we will get into that in a second, but quickly I wanted to touch on how myself and you know each other, Jill. And that is, myself and Jill met on social media a few years ago. My little boy Stanley was really, really poorly, and Jill reached out to me and just instantly felt a connection. Like, you were really kind and really supportive and you know, with social media, you've got to be a bit wary, haven't you? So I think at first you're sort of like, oh, who is this person? And I think I'd already followed you and I was intrigued by what you did and liked your messaging. And then we really connected. And then through that, Jill has done one-on-one sessions with me and has really, really helped me. I like say that you're like my little guardian angel because you really have like helped me and supported me and championed me. And it's really nice. Like, I love that, like women supporting women. And I think there's so much space for all of us. And by supporting each other, we can get so much more out of life and out of being ourselves and all of that. So I'm really grateful to you, Jill, first of all. But secondly, I sort of wanted you to explain to listeners what an empowerment coach is exactly, what it is that you do, so that people have got an understanding of where you've come from and what you do before we get into the conversation.
For me, there is, obviously, I'm a huge supporter of women. I've just always been a girl's girl, but it's not that I don't work with men. I actually do work with men too. And I definitely empower men and women to be the most authentic and connected version of themselves. And I think what I tend to do is really see the parts of people that they don't see themselves. So really working with the subconscious, because we all want to be, I think most of us want to be the best that we can be, but we show up in certain ways that limit us from doing that, and we have repeated patterns that limit us from doing that, and things hold us back and stop us from being that ultimate, truest, most connected version of ourselves. So I work with people to ensure that their inner world matches their outer world, because it's all well and good that we may have all these nice things and we should feel really grateful for that, but if we internally feel disconnected from that and think, well, why do I feel this disconnection? Why do I not feel happy? It's because our inner world doesn't match our outer world. And so my job is to empower you to go inward, to dial it back in and return to who you are, to your core, without the stories, without the programs, conditions and limitations, and speak from that place with confidence. And then when we do that, typically as a byproduct, we start to manifest more of what we want and less of what we don't.
Yeah, absolutely. When you first reached out to me and we started chatting, I was in a really, one, because Stanley was poorly, in a really vulnerable space. But then after that, we had lockdown and I wasn't very happy at work. And we spoke a lot during that time. And I think what really impacted me from our conversations was that dialing back down and going, who are you and what is it that you want and what's the authentic version of you?
Most people don't know what they want, though, Sarah.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of the problem, isn't it? People don't know what they want. We're sort of told what we want and told how we should be and told how we should feel. And that comes from a very early age, again, which I'll sort of tap into a bit later on. But I think we are so conditioned to feel certain ways or want certain things that we think we want. But actually, when, like you say, when you dial it back, you go, well, did I even want that in the first place? Or is it just because I feel like I should want that thing because it's what I've been told all my life? And in terms of then going into the taboo subject, I guess, of the episode is owning your sexuality. And I want to talk about why that is taboo. Why is women being sexy or being sexualized taboo if it is our choice or their choice to present themselves like that? Why do you think that it becomes stigma, it becomes a taboo subject if women are sexy and they choose to be that way?
I know. It's wild, isn't it? Because really, it's the same as death. Like, sex and death are the two things that most people will have to deal with in their life, yet no one really wants to talk about it. And I think there's many reasons for this, particularly with women. And there's the whole thing around patriarchy. And generationally, women, you know, when I think of my mum, when I think of my gran and my great-grandparents, women were not allowed to work. Their job was to, like, ensure that their man was kept happy and that they made sure the dinner was on the table. And so this culture of us being beneath men is ingrained in us, and it's carried through us in our DNA. Like, we have carried that. Never underestimate as women what we carry that's not even ours. Like, we carry so much ancestrally, so much trauma from the women that came before us who weren't allowed to say no to sex from their husband. All of this is 100%, I believe, passed down to us because that's a level of trauma that someone has had to endure. And of course, generationally, it gets passed down, because if a woman is pregnant and, you know, there's stress there, or there's anxiety, or there's trauma that that person has faced, then goes into the baby, then they grow up witnessing how women have been treated. So it all definitely comes from this whole culture from generations way before ours. But what we are seeing is it's starting to change now. And I think that unless we start to work on our own shame, Sarah, because we hold a lot of shame as women, you know, for even having those thoughts of, you know, I want to do this or I want to explore that. It's like, I shouldn't, it feels dirty, it feels wrong, it feels like I'm weird, I'm a bad person. So straight away we internalize that and we hold that shame in the work a lot with the body and how we store, as women particularly, a lot of trauma in our womb space. And, you know, that is where creation comes from, right? We are created in that space and we create from that space. But we also hold a lot of trauma in that space as women. And we see this a lot, women who hold this shame. And unless we can go in and start to own, actually, what do I really want? What am I saying yes to, but I really want to say no to? What do I need to maybe heal? You know, where have I maybe had sex when I didn't want to before? Where have I not really had a boundary? Never underestimate, as a woman particularly, that we all hold levels of trauma, different levels. There's trauma with a big T, trauma with a small T. But most women at some point in their life have a level of trauma that is in that space, even from childbirth, that they haven't really healed from. And so much of it, we are just trying to be good girls, a good wife, a proper, respectable woman. And we ignore and we self-abandon our own needs to meet the needs of other people.
God, so taps into so much that I've been hearing from my feedback on Instagram. And also, like, it resonates massively with me. And I think, like you say, it's that shame that you might carry from a previous relationship or from an experience where you maybe didn't have boundaries in place, or you wanted to say no, but you ended up saying yes because you end up people pleasing or been told to feel a certain way or act in a certain way. So it's sort of actually, it's stripping it right back, isn't it? And I think, again, through our sessions, I feel like that's what you've sort of done with me, but taking it back and going, where is this shame coming from? Where is this feeling coming from? Is it a big trauma that's something that you really need to delve deep into? Is it something that you're not even aware of, that actually when you start chatting about these things, it comes to light? If you've not got someone like yourself to chat to, where would people start to sort of uncover where this feeling's coming from?
Do you know what? I think the best advice I could give on that, you know, there's so much free resources on YouTube and things, Sarah, but it can become overwhelming. And it's a sacred space, right? And we want to make sure that we are, first of all, noticing any patterns. I mean, I speak to a lot of clients, Sarah, and this is a really common thing where women particularly enjoy sex at the start of a relationship. And then a few years in, they're like, oh, I don't want to have sex with this person anymore. Why is that? Why is it always okay at the start? And then I go off sex, but I could have sex with someone else. We see these repeated patterns. And so if anyone is noticing that they're not enjoying sex with their partner, they don't want to get intimate with their partner, it's really to be super, number one, gentle with yourself. You are not alone. This is so common, but no one's talking about it. So let's normalize it, first of all. It's really, really normal and it's really common. And it's because we're so disconnected to these parts of ourselves and what our own needs and desires are. And so if you're feeling like something's not quite right, get curious. Like, first of all, just get curious. The simple and the most and free tool that you can use is a journal. Like, spend time, close down your eyes and just notice how connected to your body you are. Because so many women are very in the head and we can articulate things in our head. But when we try and drop into our body, we're like, shit, there's a total disconnection there. Like, I don't know how I feel. Actually, I don't really feel anything there. And so get really curious with yourself. There's simple exercises that you can do, like placing your hands where your womb space would be, like holding your hands in that pelvic bowl area and just connecting to it with your eyes closed and noticing if you can connect to it. Is there anything coming up for you emotionally, or are you so disconnected from it? So simply journaling around, why don't I enjoy this? Why do I feel disconnected? What is my deepest desires? If I didn't fear the opinions of others, what would I want to do? Would I want to have multiple partners? Would I want to just have one partner and really have beautiful sex and feel really connected and safe? A lot of the time, in my experience, women don't feel safe, and that's why they are very disconnected from that part of their body. And it just becomes a bit of, I have to do it, but I don't actually really enjoy it with this particular person. And it's like, how would I enjoy it?
Yeah, that's such a shame, isn't it? That we know that there are so many people that are sort of living that truth, whether it's not their truth, but they're living in that space. I think, like you said, the journaling is massive, isn't it? To be able to just write down your thoughts and feelings, whether that's pen to paper or in the notes on your phone, or, you know, whatever works for you. But I think sometimes with that, do you think that people are a little bit scared of that, of going there, of what they might uncover, of what that might do? I think especially when you're in a typical family setup and it's sort of what all the generations of your family have done before, you know, 2.4 children, you've settled down, you're married, and what that might do. Do you think that that is a fear that some women may have? And again, you sort of touched on it there slightly. How do you even begin to deal with that? I think it's scary, isn't it? Uncovering feelings is scary. And I think it's important, you've got to do it. And actually, it's not as scary when you do it. Yeah, how do you sort of move through that and go, I want to find myself?
You know, it's the most challenging thing, I'll be honest, when we go into that space, because suddenly it impacts other people. And when it impacts other people, as women particularly, we take on this responsibility of, well, you know, I've got children and I'm going to really upset people if I start to share this, or this fear of, you know, what if I uncover something that I don't love this person anymore, or I don't want to be this way, or I don't want to show up in life this way anymore, just because society says I should. Actually, it's so far removed from what I really, really want, and I'm meeting the needs of other people before I'm meeting my own needs. And that is scary, because we have been programmed that we need to please other people, and that's what a good person does. So if we don't do that, we have this narrative and this belief that we're not a good person, and we're selfish, because you should be this good mom, or you should be this really good wife, and you shouldn't be expressing how you feel. And also that comes with shame. Shame is the biggest thing that holds us back. Shame holds us back. Fear holds us back. Judgment holds us back. Comparing ourselves to others holds us back, because we're like, well, no one else is doing it. All of my other friends are quite happy. Are they really? Or, you know, are they just not sharing?
But are they? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, are they really? And sometimes it just takes you to say, well, it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. It matters what I'm doing. And I always say to people, and this is a heavy thing, right? But it's an honest question to ask someone. When you get to end of life, right, would you have any regrets? Would you wish that you'd done it differently? Would you wish that you'd spoken your truth more and said what you needed? Because your needs are way more important than you believe them to be. And your life and living it in truth and living it in integrity, and you might think you're living in integrity and you're living in truth, but if you're feeling like, oh God, I've got this deep, dark secret, and I don't feel like I am living in truth, that stays with you, and it impacts everything. It impacts how you're showing up in life. It impacts how much love that you can receive from other people, because it's almost this kind of push-pull that you have of, I should be happy, this all looks great, but inside I feel so disconnected from who I am, but I don't want to take a peek and look at that. But the minute you do, and the minute you, that saying, the truth will set you free, it really does. And what I really love to do is show people how they are not responsible for everyone else. And that's tough to hear. And I remember a coach 5 years ago saying to me, you know, you're not responsible for that. If you and your partner weren't to be together, you know, and I said, but then, you know, if me and my partner weren't together, then I'd ruin my children's lives. And she laughed and she said, what are you talking about? And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, why are you laughing?
And the more that we can start to show up in authenticity and say, this is my truth. This is who I am. This is who I be. The world starts to respond to that.
Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things feedback-wise, what people said. I asked the question, if you don't feel like you're living authentically and truthfully, why is that? What is the thing that's stopping you? And the biggest thing that came back was judgment, fear of what people think, fear of people's opinions, fear of not being liked. Just reading some of the answers now, there's religion and society pressures, fear of offending people, expectations, what people expect. And a few women said when embracing the feminine side, they feel like they just get treated by men like shit, basically. And a few said it comes from bullying when they were younger or judgment from peers or parents as a child or teenager and wanting acceptance. So I think the biggest thing, like you say, is that fear of judgment. But why are we so scared of what people think? And it's really easy to sort of go, yeah, but you know, just, it doesn't matter what people, and I'm really trying to work on that myself and that being a people pleaser and setting healthy boundaries and all of that. But it is difficult, isn't it? I think we are taught and we believe that we have to be liked. And if we're not liked, then we're doing something wrong. But how do we navigate through that? Because it isn't just as easy as going, well, just, you don't care what people think, because you do, you can't help but care what people think.
And we are programmed to care what people think. We are hardwired to care what people think. And this comes from childhood. 99% of the work I do, we always go back and do in our child work, Sarah, because it comes from there. It comes from what we learn and what we witness. And even when, you know, when we're little, if you think about it, we're told, like, don't say that. A child, they're so free, right? They're just, they say what they think, zero filter. And they're able to express their emotions. We call it like the terrible twos or the child's having a tantrum. And yet what they're doing is really expressing their emotion. And we learn somewhere along the line, usually around the age of sort of two to three-ish, to sort of hold our emotion in. You know, we're taught like, don't cry, be brave, don't offend anyone, even give your granny a kiss and you're like, I don't want her, but you're naughty if you don't, you're rude. We learn all these behaviours as a child, and sometimes when we grow up with siblings, we see a sibling who maybe takes a lot of attention, then we start to shrink. We become this character and we take on these labels and identities, and we carry these weights throughout our life. We go to school and we learn that be a good girl means this. Be a bad girl or a naughty girl means this. Being a slut is someone who talks to boys. Oh, I don't want to be a slut. I can't really talk to boys. But inside I'm like, I want to talk to boys, but I don't want to be a slut. So it's so confusing. And we just carry all of these identities. And when I speak to women, they get to our age and they're like, I don't know who I am. I remember coming home and I was like, okay, I'm a mom. You know, I'm this, I'm that. And I would come home and look in the mirror and be like, I don't know who I am. And I have all these lovely things and this nice home and lovely friends, but I feel so disconnected from who I am. But I felt shame. I felt shame around that. I felt like I couldn't tell anyone, because to everyone else, they were like, you know, you should be grateful. You have all these things. I didn't sleep for a couple of years. I used to sneak in and steal my mum's sleeping pills. I didn't want to tell anyone because I felt shame around that, because I felt like I had to be, you know, I was in corporate leadership. I had to be this strong woman that could work all of these hours every week and be this kick-ass mom and still go to the gym and do all these things. I'm like, what was that? But that is what good looked like. And women being in their masculine energy and, you know, not really being in that flow and that feminine energy. And so I was so disconnected from my own sexuality, Sarah. And I own that. I'm so transparent with that because I think it's important to own that. And I had to really go back and understand, like, where do I not feel safe in my body? And a lot of women, when we do this work, it's like, why do I feel shame? I'm like, we know shame holds us back. We know fear holds us back. And when we go back and we start to look at it, it's the attachment. It's the attachment to what people think. And this is a huge thing for people. Like, our attachment, we have learned to become so attached to the opinions of others that the minute we don't meet society or what they deem as good or the minute someone doesn't agree with us or throws us under a bus or trolls us or says something, the rug is pulled from under us and we feel like we're crumbling. We're like, I'm dying inside. This, oh my God, I'm being rejected from society. I'm being rejected from the people I know. I'm unlovable. And it's because this fear of being unloved. So we keep up these pretenses and we stay in our masculine energy and we don't really connect to who we are. And by doing that, we think it keeps us safe. And in a way, it kind of loosely keeps us safe, but it keeps us so small and it keeps us so disconnected from our soul, our purpose, our spirit, our mission, and our freedom. And when we can work on shame, when we can go in and start to understand that underneath shame, underneath fear, underneath anger, underneath judgment, all of that is love. And I know that sounds quite out there, but it is. When you think about when you feel shame, Sarah, whenever, or anyone listening to this, when you feel shame, what do you want? You want to be able to tell someone your shame and for them to say, I still love you. I still love you. You want to say, like, this thing I feel is so dark and it's this shadow part of ourselves. And we all have shadow. We all have this shadow part of ourselves, but we want to bring it into the light. And when we bring it in and we hold it in love and we hold it in safety, we want to feel safe and loved, then we let go of that fear. The fear no longer exists. And it's working on that attachment. When did I learn to become so attached to the opinions of others? And how can I go in and learn to hold those parts for myself? And then that's the key to sort of our inner peace and freedom when we can do that.
Yeah. And I think it sounds scary, but actually when you sort of start unpicking those things and bring in that shame and fear to light, like you say, it is met in a space of love. And I found that with the work that I've done over the last few years with yourself and personally and with a therapist, and that actually those feelings and the things that you sort of keep bottled down and those versions of you that you know are there, when you start to gradually let them out and let those feelings out, it's not as terrifying as it thinks. And actually it's a real, like, freedom, I think was the key word you said there. It is a real sense of freedom and a real sense of relief as well. I think you go, oh, like, I feel like I can breathe, or this thing that I've been carrying around or suppressing, now that I've let it out and actually the people that matter to me and that I care about the most still love me and haven't judged me. Actually, the people that are here for me and that I do feel really comfortable with and that have shown me love and that haven't judged me, I feel so much safer with them. And you know that you've got a safe space, and they're actually then what I feel like is that more comes out, because you go, okay, right, well, I feel like safe and I don't feel as vulnerable now, and actually everything's okay. You know, I feel like what I thought 2 years ago and maybe saying how I felt or of changing slightly, I've done that thing now and everyone's okay and I'm still loved and actually I'm in a happier space and I feel much more free, and that, you know, you are starting to live authentically and that you do start to find your voice. I think the fear is the biggest thing, isn't it? Like you say, the fear and the shame and just dealing with that and what it is that is causing that in the first place and finding a way to release it, or having someone that you can speak to that will sort of help you work through that.
I love that. And I think it's, again, going back to normalizing this, you're not alone. For anyone listening to this, I've yet to meet someone that doesn't experience a level of this. And so we think it's not normal. What's not normal is that we think it's not, and therefore we hide those parts of ourselves away. And we need to start normalizing this. We need to start feeling safe to speak our truth as women. And I think this is where women coming together in communities and safe spaces like this podcast, for people to feel like they're not a weirdo and that their desires and who they are being and what they want out of life is valid. It really is. If you're feeling this pull and you felt it for a while, then get curious and explore it, but know that you have the absolute power to turn this around. I'm not saying it's easy, but you don't need to dive straight in and be like, oh my God, right, this thing with my inner child. And just start to get curious. If you notice some things around yourself that you're not fully living your truth, but you're scared to speak your truth, get curious. Some great journal prompts are, you know, what am I really afraid of? What will happen if I speak my truth? Well, what is the truth? Is this true? And a lot of the time it's fear of rejection. It's fear of abandonment. And again, we go back to, why am I scared of abandonment? Because when we are children, especially as babies, we need our caregivers to survive. But what we find is we don't need that attachment anymore. That attachment was very valid as a baby because we needed it to survive. But we don't need that when we're going into our sort of later teen years and all of that stuff. But we've still got that level of attachment that we feel that we need to dilute who we are, and we need to hide parts of ourselves to be loved. Because if I say this thing, then I'm not lovable. The truth is, you're always lovable. You absolutely are. But unless you can meet those parts of yourself with love, and that goes back to your inner world matching your outer world. If you can't receive yourself, no one else will be able to receive it for you. So how do you start to receive it for yourself? How do you start to forgive yourself for even maybe the thoughts that you're having? How do you start to normalize what you're feeling and hold all of those parts of yourself with complete compassion and love? And then when you start to accept those parts of you, the world starts to accept those parts of you. It's a mirror. The world is a mirror on how we're showing up for ourselves.
I think there's a lot of stuff, again, like you say, that we're brought up with. I sort of asked the question on Instagram about this. Like, I was thinking last night about all the things that I was led to believe when I was young and in my like really formative years. And so I asked the question of what other people as women had been brought up being told. I'll just read a few of them because it is what you've been talking about. And I think it does sort of explain why we're so conditioned to think and play small. So no one likes to show off. That was one of the ones that I was told a lot. And it was really strange considering like I was acting from the age of 14, but really like told no one likes to show off. So I really, and we've worked on this together, haven't we? I've really spent a lot of my life going, well, you know, I'm really lucky and I'm really grateful. And rather than actually owning what I've done and my successes and my hard work, I've been like, well, no one likes to show off. So I better play small. Another one was, you touched on this slightly. At school, you were told if you didn't put out, you were frigid. But if you did, like, you know, kiss a boy or sleep with a boy, then you were a slut. So there was sort of no in between. You're either one or the other. So I think as a woman, a young woman trying to find your way and find your sexuality and what you like is really hard because you're put in a box whether you do one thing or not, and you don't want to be either of those things. So you sort of, I found myself really like in limbo in the middle of that, sort of going, oh well, you know, I feel a certain way but I can't do a certain thing because I'll be labeled a slut, or you know, I'll be promiscuous and that's not good. So you don't want to be that. And then that carries on with you throughout life. So all of those for me sort of play into what men want as opposed to what actually you want, or how, what makes you happy or what makes you feel comfortable. So any of those sort of like resonate with yourself? Have you heard those a lot with chatting to people and your clients?
All of them and some. I mean, my mum used to say some of that stuff to me, Sarah. I mean, my mum, she's just this amazing, strong woman. But she would be like, you know, guys just want to use you for sex. Like, you know, you really need to watch that. And if you want to be respected, just don't, you know. But then she also would say things like, you know, sex is good, enjoy it, just be careful and things like that. I mean, my mum was a modern mum, right, for sure. But she definitely was very strong, and she brought my sister up to be very, very strong, independent women. So I heard all of that, but I also was brought up not to take shit from men. But do you know, it's what's really interesting is all of this is true. All of this has happened, and it comes from generations of what we've learned, how our mums were in our marriages, how our grandparents were. And as I said, going back to the beginning, women didn't even, they weren't allowed to work. My granny wasn't allowed to work. And my granny was a really intelligent woman. I remember my dad and mum split up. My dad was a serial cheat, and he split up with my mum, and she was 8 months pregnant with me. But I remember my mum saying that, you know, when she wasn't getting on with my dad before that, she hadn't told my granny exactly what happened, but she went back and she said, "Oh, you know, he's not been nice to me or something." And my gran at the time, who adored my mum, said, "You know, well, you're married, you need to go back." Because that was her belief, and it wasn't being cruel. She genuinely was brought up to believe that that's what women just had to kind of put up with that. So of course, we have carried so much of that. But what we are seeing is a change now, and women are starting to really find their voice. But when you go back to like ancient Egyptian times, Sarah, women were goddesses. Women were worshipped.
And rightly so.
Yeah, women were like, woof, right up there, you know, orgies and all of that stuff. Like, absolutely. But then obviously patriarchy happened. But here's the thing. This can be a bit of a trigger for people when I say this. As a mum to two boys, I don't want them to grow up in a world where it's all about men bashing, right? At some point, we want to stop, because it's not their fault patriarchy happened, right? And even younger guys, it's definitely a generational thing in many ways. However, when is enough enough? When do we stop and say, right, one isn't better than the other? It's not about women being better than men being better than women, because then we're just turning the tables again and we're starting to be all about men are the worst. Of course, our children, you're a mum to a boy, Sarah, they grow up believing that men are worthless and men are shit and men are cheap. When do we stop and take responsibility and say it stops with me now? And I believe when an individual, for me, for you, for anyone listening to this, says, I'm going to take responsibility for me now, and I'm going to change the narrative, and I'm going to do the internal work that I need to do to make sure that I am living my truth, make sure that I am healing any trauma that I have in my body so that it doesn't get passed down. It stops with me. It doesn't get passed down to my children, my daughters, my sons. They don't grow up with that belief. And I believe there has to be a point where we come together as men and women, as a collective, and say, we're working together. It's not about being one or the other. It's like, how do we respect and love and understand that, yes, we are different, but we are human. You know, patriarchy has adversely affected women 100%, but it also has adversely affected men. You know, men can't cry, they have to act a certain way. So it does impact them. We see it with men in suicide and how they don't want to talk. Women, you know, in many ways, we're very fortunate, Sarah, because we have this, right? We have this space where we can really talk to each other and feel seen and feel heard and feel safe. Guys don't seem to have that. Patriarchy has impacted that. And so when do we stop and say, right, and this goes back to what I said to you earlier, taking individual responsibility and understanding, it's not my job to fix him. It's not my job to make my partner understand this. It's my job to show up for me authentically, honestly. And when I do that, the world responds to me differently. Either my partner gets on board with the most authentic, connected, truthful version of me, or we separate, or it doesn't happen. Either way, you're free, because you're no longer prisoner to the bullshit that you're telling yourself.
Yeah. Or that you've been told over years. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so true, isn't it? I think we just all sort of need to come together. And I think that's what spaces like this are really important for men and women to be able to open up and understand each other and work together. Like you say, it's not a either or. What we really need now is to all find a space where we can, it sounds really cheesy, doesn't it? But live harmoniously and help each other. And I think opening up conversations is really helping that.
Yeah, definitely. We want that. And when we take the individual responsibility for our own stuff, number one, it's right, know that you're not alone. You're absolutely not alone. And everyone is impacted in some way, shape or form. Everyone's life is different. Everyone's story, everyone's level of trauma is different. Nevertheless, you're only responsible for you. And when you start to take radical responsibility for who you are being, how you're showing up and starting to live more truthfully and in integrity with yourself, the world responds differently to you. you set those boundaries. You either speak those boundaries, or sometimes you don't even need to say the words. People just feel it from your energy that things have changed. They feel the change. They're like, I wouldn't, you know, oh God, that something's changed with her. I don't know what it is, but you know, she's really in her power right now. And that's amazing. Like, I see that with you, right? You are so in your power. And of course, we're all still learning. I'm still learning. I still face fear. I still face fear when I'm ready to sort of step into something new and the limiting belief comes in and says to me, no, it's too big for you. You can't do that. And then I remind myself of what my mission is and why I'm here. But I only got that from get to know myself. Like, actually, again, it sounds cheesy, but be my own best lover. Like, what do I like? What gives me pleasure? What makes me happy? And then I start to show up that way for myself. And then I understand that it's safe to let someone else in and to serve me and to support me in that space as well. We don't need to do it alone. You know, it's understanding and bringing in safety into our body as women, particularly to say, you know, it's safe to receive this from someone else. It's safe to allow help and from other people. I don't have to figure it all out on my own.
Absolutely. I remember when I was going through some stuff at work and you gave me like a sort of coping mechanism, a way of sort of going, right, okay, this is something that you can do that will help you maybe when you're feeling in a space where you're feeling that you're having to play small or you've not got your voice or you're feeling a bit anxious. Do you have any sort of coping mechanisms that people could use day to day, or one thing that you use frequently that really helps if you're in a space where you're feeling sort of anxious or vulnerable or you're not being true to yourself?
Yeah, there's so many things, but my go-to is regulating my breath. So again, we underestimate the breath and what happens. And when we are in that high alert state and when we're feeling fearful or anxious, simply placing one hand on your heart space, the other hand on your belly, closing down your eyes. And I always say to people, when we close down our eyes, it's an invitation to go inward. Rather than our eyes being open and being distracted, we close down our eyes and set a timer on your phone for like 90 seconds or 2 minutes and just breathe in for the count of four through your nose, out through the count of four through your mouth. And what that does, if you do that for between 90 seconds and 2 minutes, it regulates your nervous system, so brings your nervous system into safety for up to 6 hours. And it's a simple, simple tool. Often we're looking for the big shiny thing, but the simple thing we can do for ourselves is allow our body to feel safe. And also affirmations are really, really powerful. So when we can do them together. So when you're placing your hand on your heart and your hand on your belly and breathing in, I am safe. Breathing out, I am safe. Breathing in, I am powerful. Breathing out, I am safe. You know, something that's really affirmative. What I can do, Sarah, is I can actually give you listeners a link to a 2-minute exercise that I've got that just regulates the breath and brings in the affirmations at the same time. So I can share that link with your listeners. They can just go on and do that.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yes. And the other one that you gave me that really, really helped was imagining a gold light around me. And I think it was a way of deflecting any sort of negativity. And it really actually really helped. So I'd imagine this like gold ball of light around me and be like, okay, right, I feel safe. It was like a safe space when like nothing could penetrate this light. It sounds really silly, doesn't it? It's just a visualization, but it really, really helped. It really worked.
And it does work. It's energy. Everything is energy. And we underestimate that. We think, you know, I need to take some medication for this and for that. And please, you know, never underestimate the power that you hold within your body, within your breath. And when you do these simple tools, it is life-changing. If you do it enough over time, you create new neural pathways in your brain that start to cultivate safety, so you're able to drop in really quickly. You know, maybe the first 5 or 6 times you maybe try it, you're like, my head's all over the place, I don't know what I'm doing here. I was the same. Like, I never used to be able to meditate for more than 30 seconds when I started this, and now I can go to silent meditations for 3 days, Sarah.
Wow.
I mean, who even am I?
Amazing. I love that. Could literally chat to you all day, Jill. You're doing this amazing. I've got your podcast, haven't you? Which is She Loves Herself. I love your Monday Love. Jill does like a 15-minute snippet, which is like a pep talk, which really gets you fired up for the week, which is great. We'll pop that in the show notes. We've talked about so much, like I say, we could talk about so much more, but if you could offer just one piece of advice to women who want to start owning their sexuality, what would it be?
Get to know yourself. That's it. Because we think we can almost look at things and say, well, okay, well, that looks sexy, or if she's doing this and she's doing that, I should do that. What do you want? Like, if fear didn't exist, grab your journal, a fear of judgment around my sexuality and what I deeply desire intimately did not exist, what would I do? How would I start to show up? How would I speak? What would I ask for? Then we get to the root of, actually, this is what I really want. How does that feel? Notice how it feels in your body. If it feels sexy, if it feels good, if it feels empowering, then you're on to something there. Start working with it. And it might not feel safe starting to explore that and talk about it. You don't need to do it all at once, but start to bring in that nervous system regulation work so that your body feels safe enough to speak your truth. And know that you cannot fail, ladies. You can't get it wrong. People might not like it, but that's on them. You know, that saying, what people think of me is none of my business. We need to start embodying that and embracing that much more, because it's the truth. The only thing you're here to do is live your truth. So start living it, start exploring it, and start speaking it into the world. You know, take one step at a time, put one foot in front of the other. Don't overwhelm your nervous system. But my goodness, do not live with regret, because you can't get that time back. There is only now.
That's so true. That's it. I'm going to go get my journal. I'm writing these things down. Tomorrow I'm going to be a different woman again, Jill, after speaking to you. Oh, thank you so much. I know that the followers will have got so much from that. And like I say, we need to chat again, because there's so much more to unpick. But thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Wow, Jill was amazing. I love chatting to Jill, and I always come away just feeling like I've really tapped into myself and how I'm feeling, and like she sees a different side of me. So I hope that really resonated with you all, and that you sort of felt the same. What really stuck out for me was how, as women, we are literally born with the shame and we're fighting it from birth. And we even get passed down that negativity from our own mothers, who, again, are going through the same as us. They've generationally been brought up with these feelings of shame and fear. And I think what Jill was saying is it's so important for us to take responsibility for ourselves and to lean on your community, on people that you trust, on and not to be afraid of exploring how you're feeling, however that may be, however that might manifest for you. So journaling and just taking baby steps, just finding yourself and exploring. But you can find out more about Jill Ritchie on her Instagram page, which is Just Jill Coaching, and her podcast, She Loves Herself. I would really recommend a listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and follow so you never miss another episode. Thank you for listening.